Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Mayfield, Evans is doubled, looking around, flips it out, Irvin gets in.
Man, you know, we're watching Green Bay, Chicago while we're playing the Cowboys in a close game, and the Bears and Packers are in a close game with the sixth seed on the line. How about the Bucks and Falcons? The Bucks have the Saints. They're down in this game by 10 at one point. They're down by 6 heading into the fourth quarter. They were a 15-point favorite at kickoff. Meantime, the Falcons are in a shootout with the Panthers. And by the way, I mean, Bryce Young, Dave Canales, the job that he did with Bryce Young down the stretch, pretty impressive. But you had that battle going on. Scott Reynolds is a reporter for the Pewter Report. You can follow the Pewter Report on X at P-E-W-T-E-R Report. Scott joins us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. We had Scott yesterday, you know, to snag the sixth seed. Either we win, we clinch, or if we lose, Green Bay's got to lose. So both of those games were going down the stretch simultaneously. And Bucks and Falcons fans were kind of in the same boat. Pretty thrilling for the last Sunday of the year.
Yeah, it certainly was. And not just for the Buccaneers getting the win, but for Mike Evans on the last play of the game, the Bucs defense got a needed stop. He was 5 yards away from getting 1,000 yards for the 11th straight season, tying Jerry Rice's all-time record. And Mike Evans is the one and only receiver to begin a career with 11 straight 1,000-yard season. So it was kind of a double whammy for the Buccaneers. They got the win they needed to get in the playoffs and win the NFC South for a fourth consecutive season, and they got Mike Evans that milestone, too. It just solidifies his Hall of Fame status.
Oh, my God, for sure. I mean, that debate has long been over, in my opinion. The reaction to him getting another 1,000-yard season was really special, considering that the stakes of the game were so big. But that was, right, that was basically the play that kind of cinched it, right? It was,
yeah,
because did New Orleans have any timeouts left before that play? I forget, because they scored another touchdown.
Yeah, and the Buccaneers were up by 8. They got a stop on fourth down, on 4th and 5, and they got the ball.
Oh,
back.
Got it. When they got offense. It back, they threw it.
Yeah, correct, exactly. Yeah, but it was kind of a crazy scene because they were trying to get Mike the record and trying to score kind of simultaneously. They were down at around the 10-yard line. And they called a play for Mike to get that. The Saints really kind of had good leverage on Evans, bracketing him. And it was too much of a risky throw. So Baker Mayfield was in distress, kind of dumped the ball off to Bucky Irving. And he scored the touchdown, the go-ahead touchdown. And you know, while Buccaneer fans were celebrating the TD, they were like, oh, no, you know, Mike's not going to get the record now. But thankfully, Todd Bowles' defense boat up in time and get the ball back so they could get the cherry on top with the Evans record as well.
Scott, I'm just realizing this because I wasn't watching that game because we were intent on our game and the Bear-Packer game. But let me just make sure that I'm clear on this. Up 27-19, which is an 8-point game, as we all know. You know, that's a potential one-possession game. Yeah. New Orleans with no timeouts left. And there are 36 seconds to go in the game.
Yeah.
There's a knee opportunity to clinch the game, and instead, the Bucs call the pass play to Mike Evans to get another 1,000-yard season. Do I have that right?
Yeah, you're exactly right. Gutsy move by Todd Bowles, putting the trust in his quarterback, Baker Mayfield, who has thrown 41 touchdowns this year. Just a remarkable season for Mayfield. 41 touchdowns. 4,500 yards, 70% completion percentage. Trusting Mayfield, trusting Mike Evans, one of the best to ever do it, and in that situation, and that's all you could ask for when, you know, from your head coach, is to trust the players to do the right thing. And it worked out beautifully for Tampa Bay. So they checked all the boxes. They got the record for Mike. They got the win. You know, and it, as it turns out, they didn't need it because the Falcons also lost to the Panthers. But you'd rather have the win and get in on your own than have to kind of back into the playoffs due to another team, you know, not prevailing. And so that's what happened in Tampa. And it's now a remarkable five straight years of playoffs in Tampa Bay for a franchise I've covered for 30 years. And we're not even halfway to making the playoffs when it comes to all of the bad Buccaneer football I've watched. The decade of darkness with the Jameis Winston years, the Josh Freeman, Mike Glennon, Josh McCown years. So they're certainly enjoying a much-needed stretch of success here. And Jason Light, the Bucs general manager, deserves a ton of credit.
Well, you're not old enough to remember the John McKay, Steve Spurrier years, so that's a good thing when they were truly horrible as an expansion team.
Yeah.
No, I just think it's kind of remarkable that, and especially Bowles, and look, we know Todd Bowles, longtime Redskin fans know Todd Bowles. He won a Super Bowl here. I've been a huge fan of Bowles from afar. I think he's one of the best defensive minds in football. But, you know, he tends to be, right, Scott, a little bit more conservative. And to put the ball up for grabs, I guess, you know, in a game that you have to have maybe up eight instead of taking a knee out the clock is just, it's kind of remarkable, actually.
It really is, because you're right. He is a conservative coach, and, you know, I grew up in the Northern Virginia area. I was born in Alexandria. I grew up a Redskins fan myself. I named my dog Manly after Dexter Manley, so... You know, I have some affinity for that area and for his success with the Redskins. And I think he's kind of grown and evolved. You know, he's 61. You wouldn't know it looking at him. He looks younger than that. And he's kind of acting that way, too. I think that he's not one of these old dogs that doesn't really adapt and change. He's an innovative defensive mind, and I think that he's surrounded himself with some good coaches. Look at Liam Cohen, and I think that comes from trusting your defense. What's the worst that can happen? All right, a pick six, and now you have to stop him to get the 2-point conversion. You still get the win, right? Sure, he would have taken some heat for that, but at the same time, he's a player's coach. He wants to see that milestone for Mike. It was worth the risk, and he trusts his offense. Gosh, this game went to overtime. The worst case scenario. You know, it's tied up. They're going in overtime. You trust your defense, and you trust Liam Cohen's offense, because Tampa Bay's offense has really worn the superhero cape this year. There's been so many injuries on the defensive side, and I think this Commanders team is going to present some real problems for Bowles' defense, because they're missing a couple of starters in their secondary, and Antoine Winfield Jr., the all-pro safety from last year, who's missed 8 games this year due to injury. They're hopeful he returns. And Jamel Dean, one of their top corners, has been out as well. But you trust the offense. The offense has averaged 29.5 points per game, and it's right up there with Washington in terms of the prolificness. And you know, we'll see what happens on Sunday night. It's going to be a great game. Jaden Daniels has grown, and I remember watching that season opener, 37-20. It was a victory here in Tampa. And you kind of left that game feeling, wow, boy, they caught the Commanders at the right time, right? You got Jaden Daniels in his first NFL game. I knew he was going to be special. Rashad White, who was one of his teammates at Arizona State, has been a huge fan of his all the way through the LSU years, et cetera. And now they're going to see the more mature, the better version of Jaden Daniels. And it should be one heck of a game, because you have two quarterbacks now, and Baker Mayfield and Jaden Daniels, that are playing lights out for the teams.
Well, I think, you know, you nailed it. Like, I mean, you can already see that with it's the highest total, I think, on the board at 50-51 right now. Odds makers expecting an absolute shootout. Look, from our standpoint, we've struggled to stop people. The quarterback list that we have faced, listen to this, Scott. So Trey Lance yesterday, Penix in his second game last Sunday night, Kenny Pickett for the most part against the Eagles, Spencer Rattler, Will Levis, and Cooper Rush. That's the last six games of quarterbacks that Washington's faced, and they have struggled defensively, except against Levis. That was essentially the only game that they couldn't get off the field, or they did get off the field defensively. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I love Todd Bowles. I love the way they scheme it up. But you've talked about the injuries. The Bucs actually have struggled defensively here in the second half of the season. I remember that Carolina game where Hubbard fumbled in overtime. That looked like it was about to be a loss, and they moved the ball up and down the field. So let's start there. Tampa's defense right now, Dean, Whitehead, Winfield Jr. in particular. What do we expect Sunday night from the Tampa defense?
It's a banged up unit in the secondary, and it has been all season. Todd Bowles has brought out the rubber bands, the super glue, the duct tape, right, trying to piece it together. And it just depends if Tampa Bay's defensive front can get there with their pressures. Todd Bowles likes the blitz. Can those blitzes get home? It's one thing to get in the backfield. It's another thing to get Jaden Daniels on the ground. Tampa Bay was able to do that a couple of times in that first game, but at the same time, Daniels had 88 yards rushing in his NFL debut against Tampa Bay because there were so many missed sack opportunities and there were open running lanes for him to run through, and he was picking up first downs left and right. Tampa Bay's offense just kind of had a bit of an onslaught that game. Baker Mayfield started the season with four touchdowns, and it really wasn't close because of the struggles on the defensive side for Washington. But this very well could be a shootout, right? This could be a game where the team with the ball last wins. I'm kind of expecting that. The Buccaneers have struggled. They've given up a slew of 30-point games in the beginning of the season. They've gotten better down the stretch, but only because they have faced some lesser teams. They've faced the Panthers twice. They faced Las Vegas, right, who has double-digit losses. Same with the Giants. They played the Giants coming out of the bye week, and they won 30-7. So they've faced some teams, and also the Saints, a five-win team, that have not been juggernaut offenses by any stretch of the imagination. They actually lost the Cooper Cup and the Cowboys because they lost the turnover battle 3-0. And if you're looking for the Achilles heel for the Bucs defense, it's the lack of takeaways. Tampa Bay has 7 interceptions on the season. That's terrible. And they just don't take the ball away. They don't get enough turnovers to help out the offense. And, they survived against the Raiders. They were actually trailing at one point. They pulled away for a 28-13 win with 2 fourth quarter touchdowns. But the reason why they were able to come back and win is because the turnover margin, even though they lost it that game, 3-2, it wasn't 3-0 like it was against the Cowboys, and that's why the Bucs lost 26-24 on Sunday night. I'll throw another statistic out there that the Commanders fans probably want to hear. Tampa Bay is 0-4 in primetime games this year, including that 26-24 loss a couple weeks ago on Sunday Night Football against.
Yeah, they were all close, though.
They were close.
They had a shot at the Chiefs at Arrowhead. I remember that one.
Yep. Yeah, so they've been close. But Tampa Bay really either has to do one of two things. They've got to play turnover-free football on offense to have the best chance to win. Or if they do turn the ball over, the defense has got to play complementary football and get some takeaways, which is something that this unit just simply hasn't done with enough regularity. So that's the biggest concern is if Tampa Bay plays turnover-free, you got a pretty good chance of winning because it probably means a lot of points. And that means they're doing the right things on offense. This team can score with the best of them. But if they have some turnovers on offense, they got to get some takeaways on defense to neutralize those. They cannot afford to lose the turnover battle against a 12-win Washington team. You can do that against a lesser team and still eke out a win. But if you lose the turnover battle, to a good team in the playoffs, you're going home.
Yeah, it's interesting because Washington and Tampa have basically the issue here has been takeaways too. 7 interceptions Tampa's had on the season, the exact same number Washington's had. Washington has 17 total takeaways on the year, Tampa 18. Defenses that are in Bowles and then with Quinn and Joe Witt Jr. that have kind of thrived off of takeaways had poor takeaway seasons. I am impressed, and you have, you know, you got the details here, but I think Liam Cohn's done a great job. Mayfield, obviously, I think the Canales kind of turned it around last year for him. He'll put some up for grabs, right? And then give me something on Bucky Irving, too, because loved him at Oregon. I thought he actually had a really good game against Washington in the second half in the opener. But how difficult is it going to be to slow Tampa down and get him off the field?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough with Bucky Irving because he's small but powerful, right? He reminds me of Warrick Dunn, who was a guy that I covered here, former Florida State Seminole player, first-round pick of the Bucks in 97. He can make the first guy miss in the hole, and that's what he did at Oregon. Not the fastest guy, but yet he has a couple of big chunk runs this year because he makes guys miss. He has the ability to slip and break tackles for a smaller guy. You know, he's not a 215-pound back that's just a bigger target. He's smaller, so he's got a smaller hit radius. And if you don't wrap him up, he's got some powerful legs. He's stronger than he looks, and he has that kind of start-stop ability. Not to the level of like a Barry Sanders. He's nothing like that, but he is a special talent. What I love about him is his consistency. He averaged over 5 yards a carry, and it wasn't because he had an 8 yard per carry game one game and a 2 yard per carry game the next. No, this guy just constantly hit around 5 yards per carry in every single game. The consistency is phenomenal, and you get him in space in the screen game, he's also dangerous. He had a 43-yard screen catch and run against the Panthers. He's tough around the goal line. He's got a nose for the end zone. There's a lot to like about him. And then there's not much drop-off. When you put Rashad White in there as a backup, right, this was a guy that was 10 yards away from a 1,000-yard season last year. He's great in pass protection. He does a great job catching the ball out of the backfield, too. He's very slippery and elusive for a bigger back. And Sean Tucker's the fastest back on the team. I mean, he's the third-string guy. They can barely get him on the field. He would easily be a number two for any team in the NFL, and he might be a starter on a couple of teams. So Tampa Bay's backfield is loaded, and that's an area that they really rely on because Baker Mayfield's very good off play action. And so Liam Cohen does a great way of scheming against opponents. He can use 13 personnel with three tight ends. He can use 12 personnel, which is two tight ends. He can go with 11, which is a three-receiver set. That's kind of like his bread and butter. And he also does 21 personnel, which means two running backs on the field at the same time with a tight end and a receiver. So there's a lot of different personnel groupings that he can use at his disposal. And I would say probably his strong suit as a coordinator is no game plans are the same. It is incredibly hard to predict what he's going to do, what he's going to run with down and distance and personnel groupings. For years, I saw Byron Leftwich. Even when this team had Tom Brady, there was a level of predictability to his play calls. Same with Dave Canales last year. Liam Cohen is simply unpredictable. And if I don't know what's coming, you know, the fans don't know, and probably defensive coordinators don't know either. He's really special when it comes to calling plays.
Do we get basically with Liam Cohen the same? Is it Sean McVay, Shanahan, because of the time he spent with the Rams? Is it a lot based on kind of a zone run scheme base and then the bootlegs and the play actions off of it?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah, because you can definitely see the Sean McVay influence, right? Because that's where his origin is. He was on that Rams team for several years. He also has 2 years of play calling experience when he was the offensive coordinator at Kentucky in 2021 and also 2023. He was responsible for Will Levis, really kind of elevating his draft status there. And you know, and even though he didn't call plays at the NFL level, like Canales, he had a better head start than Canales did last year as a rookie play caller because, you know, when you're at Kentucky and you're going up against the likes of Georgia 1 week, Alabama the next, LSU after that, Tennessee after that, Auburn after that, you've got to be creative because you don't have the talent to go up against some of those upper echelon SEC teams. So you have to win with scheme. And so I call the SEC NFL Junior. And so he's got 2 years of play calling experience against NFL Junior that he brought to Tampa. and so he's had to win with scheme. He's not afraid to out scheme. And then he'll let his players win too, right? It's a good mix of I'm going to match up Mike Evans on your corner, and we'll let the player dictate the who wins, and then sometimes those scheme guys open. So it does start with the zone run scheme, but at the same time, Tampa Bay has really found more success with the gap scheme, which is more of like a man blocking, duo blocking concept.
Yeah,
they've got some ballers on that offensive line, and it's a young, talented offensive line. Tristan Wirfs is a Pro Bowler. Lou Gehrke, I think, is going to be Lane Johnson's replacement as a Pro Bowler when Johnson retires. He's that good at right tackle. Cody Mauch is an incredible guard on the rise, and their first-round pick was Graham Barton at center. And they ride that offensive line and Bucky Irving to success this year on the offensive side of the ball.
One last one. I mean, you guys lost Godwin late in that Baltimore Monday night game. Remember how Todd Bowles was kind of questioned about that after the game. And then, you know, Jalen McMillan, the rookie, you know, opposite Odunze last year at Washington, he's really taken off. So is he the clear number two to Evans?
Well, right now he is, for sure. But they're going to re-sign Chris Godwin next year, and they're going to have all three of those guys at Baker Mayfield's disposal. And that just makes this offense even more potent next year. So that's something to kind of, like, have some fun with and imagine how fun that's going to be for Mayfield when Godwin gets back. That it's a dislocated ankle. It's not as serious as the ACL sprain that he had, or ACL tear he had a couple years ago. So I would expect the Bucs to re-sign Godwin. He's really only their big free agents that they have to contend with. But yeah, McMillan has really come into his own. It's been kind of like a cruel blessing in disguise to not have Chris Godwin, because it's forced McMillan to kind of move up the depth chart, and he wasn't really ready for it at the beginning of the season. And during that initial stretch where Godwin was sidelined, and he had Mike Evans sidelined too with the hamstring. But he's really kind of come into his own down the stretch here. He's incredibly hot in terms of the touchdown production. I think five straight games with a touchdown. And he's going to be a fantastic player. Jason Light has drafted not just the best receiver in franchise history with Mike Evans, but also the second best in Chris Godwin. I don't know any general managers that can sit there and say, yeah, I drafted the two best all-time greats in this franchise at this position, right? And Light's done that. And the way McMillan is starting, and they liked him coming out as a third-round pick. They felt like he was a steal in the third round, the way they felt that Chris Godwin was a steal in the third round. If this guy has the type of career Godwin has, holy smokes, do they have something going on in Tampa Bay for their longevity at the receiver position. Godwin only had one touchdown as a rookie. And what does McMillan have, eight? I mean, it's crazy. Yeah.
Scott Reynolds is joining us right now. He's a reporter for the Pewter Report covering the Buccaneers. Last one, and I appreciate the time. You know, you've already talked about the opener. I mean, we know as NFL fans, week one is totally different. Both these teams have evolved, and Jaden certainly has. He was running to run. He now runs to throw as well. Big difference from the opener. But, you know, the level of kind of, you know, confidence going into this from a Tampa perspective. We were doing the thing where it was like, do you want Tampa? Do you want the Rams? Nobody really wanted Philly that much, you know, if they ended up being the 7 seed. You know, you guys had some options as well. Where did this one fall on the wish list?
Well, you take some confidence, right, if you're the Buccaneers, because you did beat this team, and you beat them pretty soundly in week one. Remember, it was, I think it was 37-13 before Daniel scored the last touchdown in the last minute, kind of a garbage time. So at the same time, that's a long time ago. But I think this team can draw from the fact that in the first four games of the season, it beat the Commanders, a 12-win team. It went up to Detroit and beat a two-loss, what turned out to be a two-loss Lions team, right? A 15-win Lions team in week two. And then it hosted the Eagles, who they trounced in the playoffs 32-9 last year. The Eagles came in wanting revenge. They didn't get it. They lost 33-16 here in Tampa in week four, and that's a 13-win team. So the Buccaneers, they've had some struggles.
Philly had nobody that day, though, right? Philly basically had no A.J. Brown, you know, no Devontae Smith. They were down several key players.
That's true. That's a fact. That's definitely worth pointing out. But I'm just saying from a confidence standpoint.
Sure.
Right, Tampa Bay can sit there and say, look at our resume, look what we've accomplished. we're a really good team. We've dealt with some injuries. We had some tough losses. We shouldn't have lost both those games to the Falcons, certainly the one in overtime up there. Kind of gave that game away. Went toe-to-toe without Mike Evans and Chris Godwin in Kansas City. Just about pulled off the upset there in Monday Night Football. Right, so they're close in a lot of these games. And I think, more importantly, you look at what they were able to do in Los Angeles, going out there, being down at halftime of the Chargers, and then pouring it on in the second half and really destroying them 40-17 in that game.
Yeah.
And I think they've got some confidence. This is a confident team that if they can get a couple of key pieces back for the stretch run, Winfield and Dean, Whitehead was involved in a car accident. He's out for the season. But those two guys, getting them back, I think will really add a little bit of oomph to this Bucs defense that if they're going to lose, it's going to be on the defensive side. That's going to be the culprit, because that's been the culprit this year. And it's tough for Todd Bowles to have to kind of swallow that pill. But the offense at any point in time can put up 24, 27, 30, 40 points a game. And, and they're not going to let you down. It's been Bowles' defense that has done that. But he's pulled out some defensive masterpieces. Again, go back to that playoff game last year. 32-9 against the Eagles. They even stopped the tush push at Jason Kelce's last game. So it's going to be a wildly entertaining game in Tampa on Sunday night against Jaden Daniels and the Commanders.
Great job, Scott. Really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Scott Reynolds from the Pewter Report covers the Bucs. Really good information. Fascinating what they decided to do at the end of that game yesterday. All right. If you want to jump on, we'll take a couple of calls when we come back. We'll give you a chance next hour for more calls as well. Ben Standing will join us at 12, but 301-230-0980. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, the team980.com. We're also free and live on the Odyssey app.